Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Army vet Nick Sanderson and Hangar 9. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. Diane Raver from Garden State Film Festival will present the movie of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Nick Sanderson. Welcome aboard, Nick. Army vet, right?
Yes, sir. Thanks for having us, Denny. I really appreciate you bringing us on the show.
Glad to. And Colin, your job is to try to keep Nick out of trouble. Am I right there?
Absolutely. That's my first and foremost priority. He refers to me as his parole officer. So take that in whatever direction you want to.
Hey, that's a phrase I use with people too. So we relate. Nick, tell us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
Yeah, so I joined just before 9/11 as a military police officer in the Michigan Army National Guard, kind of thinking I was going to go to college and go the traditional route. But obviously something changed on 9/11 that made us go in a bit of a different direction. So I spent some time in Kuwait and Iraq and went down to Hurricane Katrina, did a few other neat things while I was in, and got out in 2007.
Okay. You spent some time in the Mideast. What was that like?
It was a little warm. warm and sandy. We did a number of operations. We were military police, which, for those that don't know, stands for multi-purpose. But we did anything from customs to convoy escorts to gate security to, law enforcement operations. It was a mixed bag. We didn't stay anywhere for too long.
Okay, well, I think I was a Mideast war planner, so I wondered somebody was going to have to do what I planned. I'm glad somebody was out there doing that.
Yes, sir. Yeah. It was definitely an interesting. So we had, I believe it was one of the longest deployments on record for a single unit. We were in country for almost a little over 20 months.
Wow, that I have not heard of deployments that long. Anywhere. I mean, since World War II.
We shipped to Fort McCoy, and then I think we were gone for over 20 months. So
I know you're married now. Were you married then?
No. And there were a lot of guys that weren't married when we got back.
I relate to that, not personally.
It was definitely a interesting time.
Okay. And when you came home, somehow or other, an interest in flying showed up. Where did that come from?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of years, bouncing around different facets of sales, be it, car sales, insurance sales, staffing companies, and I never really found that fit. You know, when we first got home, early 2000s, right? No law enforcement was hiring. That was my original goal, was to be full-time law enforcement. And then it just got to a point where, I was in my mid-30s and I'm like, I'm not running through an academy again. So, I had taken some flight lessons at an airport and, I kind of got hooked on it. And I was like, man, I would really love to do that full time. And then some things changed. And, I met my wife now and she supported the dream and said, hey, you got that GI Bill thing. Why don't you go to college and use it?
So that makes sense.
That's what I did. It's amazing what happens when you marry a smart woman.
Colin, somehow that's about where you entered in this scenario, right?
It is, yes. So my background in aviation started when I was very young. And by the time I intersected with Nick, I was working at a local flight school here in Southwest Michigan. And Nick was one of my students. He was paired with me. And a couple of the other instructors said, oh, you're flying with Nick Sanderson. Well, keep an eye on him. So I said, okay. But it turns out we got along great. And so we have been in business together ever since then and in one way or another. But yes, I started with him under the background of flight instruction while he was earning his commercial pilot certificate.
Okay. And somewhere along that time, something led to Hangar 9. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're about to learn about Hangar 9. Okay, which one of you guys came up with that?
So basically what happened is one day Colin and I were sitting in the flight office and we were contemplating how we wanted to spend our aviation careers. And
it wasn't the first time we were having one such conversation. Yeah. It was a regular fixture to find us both in there between flights.
So our, between the two of us, we can fill an NBA team with kids. And we actually wanted to see them grow up, you know, from my military days. I know what happens when you're not around to raise your kids. So we kind of stumbled into this opportunity, and I'll let Colin tell us it better than I do. So I will let him run with that.
Sure. Well, like you were saying, Nick, we were sitting and kind of opining about what opportunities there were out there right now for pilots. And generally, it's a great time to be a pilot. There's the scary, infamous pilot shortage that you may or may not heard about. And it means that there are a lot of aviation opportunities out there. But where we were kind of in the unique situation in our lives, being a family man in particular, and with Nick's background in the military, you know, we knew that we were looking for something else. We wanted to fly, but didn't quite fit the mold of any of the existing pilot positions that we were aware of and that were available here in the Southwest Michigan area. So we said, you know what, how hard would it be to make our own opportunity? And so, you know, as Nick said, we kind of stumbled onto the opportunity to get this thing kickstarted. You know, there's a whole, as with anything government related, but especially in aviation, for good reason, but there's a whole lot of red tape and a whole lot of oversight that goes into
I think the former Mideast war planners there have their hands in the FAA.
All right. So you all can relate. But, so to get something off the ground from scratch is a monumental task. And we actually heard about an opportunity to take over something that already existed. And so we jumped on that, and it was still quite a process, but we were thankful to be able to get started with something that was already in motion.
The whole thought process behind our company, right, is, you know, when you're looking at guys that are flying net jets and things like that, you know, it's $7,000-$8,000 an hour. You know, it's not something everybody can afford. You know, the guys that are, you know, in middle management that may make a good living and have, you know, are spending their life on the road, right? They can't afford to get that net jets package, and which, you know, starts at $250,000 plus several thousand dollars an hour. But our goal was to bring something that anybody can afford, that can travel throughout the Midwest, and we can be at home at night to be with our kids. So that was really the whole mission, and that's what Hangar 9's here to accomplish.
So you are a flight service. Somebody wants flight. And basically you're basically Michigan sort of oriented, but it's a business. Yep. That's what Hangar 9 is. A couple of guys that'll fly you anywhere.
Exactly. And, you know, our plane's got about 1,000 miles of legs before we have to stop to get fuel. So with that said, you know, we can get you just about anywhere east of the Rockies, East Coast. You know, we got to stop to get gas to get to South Florida, but we can go in a pretty big radius from Michigan.
Okay.
Except for Canada, because they sell fuel in liters and we only buy fuel in free units.
Okay, guys, we're about out of time. How can somebody contact you if they'd like to use your service or like to learn how to duplicate what you're doing? How can people?
Absolutely. So being a very simple veteran here, I kept it easy. Our phone number is 1-833-FLY-HGR-9. So 1-833-FLY-HANGAR-9. And our website is hangar9online.com. hangar9online.com.
And that works too.
Yeah, see, it's easy to remember.
Nick, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation, and thank you for the way you're serving our citizens now.
Again, thanks for having us on the show. We really appreciate everything you do, and we love listening.
Colin, thank you for trying to keep Nick out of trouble. I don't know how good you are at it.
Thank you, sir. Our time will tell, won't it?
Yeah, it will.
It's a full-time job. He's pretty good.
Thanks, guys, for joining us today.
Appreciate it.
Coming up next, Quentin Roberts will discuss last weekend's Air Force Academy bowl game. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down, do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back.
From ensuring veterans get the care they deserve, to ending our nation's endless wars, to targeting out-of-control spending, Concerned Veterans for America is taking on the most important issues facing America.
You can help CVA shape a better future for Americans everywhere. Visit CVAFrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's CVAFrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Front Lines of Freedom. And it's Service Academy football time. I'm joined, of course, by our football co-host, Air Force vet Quentin Roberts. Welcome, brother. This is our last time together this year.
Danny, it's hard to imagine that the season has passed us already, but this is, it's been a tremendous season. It's been a lot of fun. We've seen a lot of good football, and it has been an absolute pleasure.
Indeed, it has. I'm proud of all three teams, I guess all five teams. Okay, this past weekend, Army and Navy didn't have any bowl games, but Air Force sure did, and boy, did they do a good job.
You know, Denny, the Falcons had to represent the service academies in the bowl season this year, as they were the only ones to receive an invite. They were invited to the Armed Forces Bowl in Fort Worth, Texas, where they squared off with the number 24 ranked James Madison Dukes. The Dukes came in with a healthy 11-1 record, and Air Force was struggling down the stretch as they came into the game at 8-4. But I tell you what, Denny, it was the Falcons who asserted themselves predominantly along the lines of scrimmage. They controlled both offensively and defensively to come away with a 31-21 victory over James Madison. The Falcons won this bowl game for the second straight season, and it was a combination of its running game and a defense that racked up 4 sacks and an interception that propelled them to victory. Air Force also ran their bowl winning streak to 5 games. Air Force turned out 351 yards on the ground, despite facing the nation's top-ranked defense in rushing of James Madison at only 62 yards per game, led by that one position that, you know, I'm so fond of, the fullback position. Senior fullback Emmanuel Michelle ran for an Air Force bowl record, 203 yards on 35 carries, and was named the Armed Forces Bowl MVP for his performance on defense. Senior linebacker Bo Richter led the way with 3 sacks and 4.5 tackles for loss, which were both Air Force Bowl records. When we look at the tail of the tape, we find that Air Force amassed 396 yards of total yards to James Madison's 283. In rushing, they outrushed the Dukes 351-26. And in time of possession, 36 minutes and 51 seconds to 23:09 for the Dukes. That is Falcon football. That is what winning looks like for our service academies. One of the things we've talked about all season, Denny, is how especially Army and Navy have looked to transition their offenses. And in doing so, the box scores look a lot differently. This is one of those, this Air Force James Madison box score is really what we have seen as the winning formula for our service academy teams. Winning the rushing battle, winning the total yards battle, controlling the clock, the time of possession, and then playing solid defense. When our teams have done that, they have fared very well. That's what Air Force did in this game as they, again, came away with the 31-21 victory over number 24-ranked James Madison.
It was an awesome game. Well played, as you just pointed out. How could we not be proud of them? And what a delightful way to end the season. They represented Air Force, of course, and as you mentioned, they represented the service academies. So we all came out looking good thanks to Air Force.
That's right, Danny. And you know what? We can say that and kind of chuckle at it, but it really is true for those who, we'll call them those darn civilians, who really don't understand a little bit more of the nuances of Service Academy and Service Academy football, we all kind of look like the same entity to them. And so when one does well, we really do represent.
Well, I think I mentioned this when we reviewed the Army-Navy game. I talked to lots of Navy fans there before and after the game, and we agreed. We're brothers and sisters, except for 2.5 hours of football once a year. Then we're against each other. But the rest of the time, we're part of the same team. I cheer for Navy every game they play, except when they play Army. And I cheer for Air Force every game they play. You know, we are one together. And we better do that or we'll not be an effective fighting force.
Yeah, and that's very true, Denny, because, of course, as we always know, and we know, it's part of a larger mission. And the defense of our country is really what that common mission is for all of us. And we may wear different uniforms, but we salute the same flag.
Amen. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking Service Academy football with Quentin Roberts. So, Quentin, this year, all the academies came out looking pretty good. I mean, Navy had a losing record, but a first-year coach trying to find his quarterback. What first-year coach wouldn't go through that, right?
Denny, that is so true. As we look at the year in review, 2023, I think what we're going to see is that from the perspective, it is two things. One, the year of the quarterback, and two, a year of transition. When we talk about the year of the quarterback, each team had problems, Air Force, Navy, and Army. Each had their respective issues keeping a quarterback healthy or finding who that right quarterback was for their team. In Air Force's case, they were rolling along 8-0, ranked number 19 in the country when Zach Larrier went down. And that helped to put them into a tailspin of losing four straight games. That wasn't the only problem, but that was a big part of it. Army, when they lost Bryson Daly, they were able to, they suffered a losing streak. And conversely, when Daly returned, they were able to win their last four games of the season and climb to a 6-6 record due to his really stellar play down the stretch. And Navy never really found that quarterback. As a matter of fact, even in the Army-Navy game, as we pointed out, they had to change their quarterback in like the second quarter. And so they never settled on who that quarterback was going to be. That's, I think, job number one as they go into the offseason. I also mentioned transition. Army and Navy in particular really started experimenting more so with different sorts of offenses due to the new rules that disallow cut blocking on the edges. And so they started looking at throwing the ball more. They tried to be more multiple, but it really seemed like in the end, when they were able to run the ball, control the clock, and play good defense, that still was the winning formula. Interested to see how it looks going forward as, again, Army really found something with Bryson Daly, who was a junior. He will return next year. Navy showed off a freshman, Braxton Woodson, who looks like he has immense talent. And if he can harness that talent, that may put Navy in a position to really surprise people next year. And Air Force has a, you know, their quarterback, Zach Larrier, is a senior. So they're going to have to reload. But Troy Calhoun is the most tenured of all the Service Academy coaches and has really been able to do that pretty well. So I think it's a bright future looking forward.
Indeed. Next year's all three service academies should do very well. We'll certainly be cheering for them. And they've all got something to be proud of for this year. So it looks like when we get together next football season, we're going to have a heck of a fun time looking at three great teams.
We sure will, Denny. And the last thing I want to point out is that Army made the big decision to move in the future to the American Athletic Conference. That is also, which is the same conference that Navy already plays in. That's going to dictate their scheduling. And as we know, Navy really had some issues when they went to the AAC. And I'm interested to see how that impacts Army moving forward too.
Well said, Quentin. Well, thank you, brother. We'll be back at it again next year. Tell you, you can take the rest of the year off with pay if you like this year. I trust you had a very Merry Christmas and that you will have a very Happy New Year. We got to stay in touch even if we're not recording for Frontlines of Freedom. God bless you, brother. Have a great year.
And may God bless you too, Denny, and yours. Thank you so much for this opportunity. And God bless our listeners as well.
Indeed.
Thank you and wish them a happy holiday.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Diane Raver will review the movie of the month and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, then take a break but stay in the area. We'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it's time for the movie of the month. So, of course, we'll be joined by our great team member, Diane Raver, from the Garden State Film Festival. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you, Denny. And as always, it's a wonderful to be with you and your listeners. It's a great honor and privilege, and I hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season.
Yes, we had a great Christmas. I trust you did, too, with your family.
Absolutely. I had all of my children together, which, of course, you know, one of them is a diplomat. And, you know, they're posted all over the world. So to have us all together was a blessing beyond blessings.
Indeed. Who knows when the next time you'll be able to do that.
Right.
That's awesome. So you are staying busy because...
I am.
The festival's in March. It's always in March, isn't it? The end of March.
It usually is, depending on when Easter and Passover hit. Sometimes it slides into the beginning of April, but mostly it's the end of March.
Okay.
It's great. We're about to publish the schedule in a couple of weeks, and the films are fantastic. So anyone who can get to New Jersey, we hope that you join us March 21st through the 24th.
And I'll keep reminding you.
Okay,
the movie Let's Eat. Now this time of year, I mean, that's everything is about Let's Eat,
right?
But this movie was incredible. You know, I would never in a thousand years, if you had asked me to make a movie about something, come up with the ideas these people came up with on how to do this.
Well, it was precious about, you know, caring for our elderly and, you know, the cycle of life and all of those wonderful. I just thought it was a great way to end the year with our wonderful movie club.
It really is. I mean, and, you know, it's one thing when you see something, you enjoy it. And another thing when it just, wow, man. Anyway, I appreciate the creativity, but I guess people who are creative and create movies have a lot of that stuff, don't they?
Right. So that's, I hope your audience enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed presenting it.
Well, they did. It made me a little more, you know, I don't have much creativity, so I'm glad to know where it went. There's got to be some in the world that was meant for me. I know it went to those folks because they did a really, really good job. Okay, here's a few comments by listeners. It's about a Chinese mother and her daughter who immigrated to the United States. And it starts with the daughter being very young and loving and being with her mom. And that's really it. That's how it began, mom and daughter.
As it mostly does for all of us.
Yeah, it does. One of the comments that was made repeatedly by listeners was, there's no men in this movie. And that's okay. Mothers and daughters have been known to get along with each other, you know, throughout all time. And they certainly did. And it sort of lets us watch the daughter grow up, doesn't it?
Yes. And again, the cycle of life, because for all of us that were late young girls, you know, we do go through that awful period in our teens. So, you know, it speaks to the pluricity of all humans, of all nationalities, of all cultures, of all, you know, race and creeds, that there's certain things that happen, you know, are just part of our humanity.
It is. And it reminded me one more time how glad I am that I have only sons. Okay. So mom and daughter cook and eat and play together as they would, of course. And then the daughter gets older. And there are, as we were just discussing, some confrontations as mom holds her teenage daughter to standards.
Yeah. Now,
let's put it this way. That occurs everywhere in the world, at least where the kids grow up to be good adults.
Yes, that's correct.
If the parents are playing their proper role, that happens. And it's never fun, but it's always worth it because it produces a good kid and a lifetime friend. Indeed, you're experiencing that now, aren't you?
Yes.
Your kids are your, and me too, your kids are your lifetime friends.
Absolutely. And as in the film, they may be my lifeline sometime.
Oh, yes.
In the distant future.
Indeed. And then the next thing we see, the daughter has a job and is productive. She's not just flipping hamburgers, not that that's not important, but she's got a serious job, and apparently she's good at it. And she likes her mom, stays in touch with her. That's how it's supposed to work too, isn't it? And in my experience, it almost always does.
Yep.
It may take a few more years for one kid or one family or another to get there, but they all get there, don't they?
Yes, they do. God willing.
And he does. And then she brings mom a birthday present, but she can't find mom. And the movie shows the pot on the stove boiling over.
Right.
And that's what happens, and it happens in life. Stuff happens. As I'm finding out, you may be about the point where you're starting to find out that old age has some downsides to it.
Yes.
Anyway, mom's sick in bed. All of a sudden, mom's in the hospital. The girl's feeding her. They're holding hands and hugging. That's the story of life, isn't it? I mean, that's how
the cycle of life, right?
And pretty soon, daughter is with her baby daughter. And as we keep saying, it's the cycle of life. It's what happens. Mm-hmm. It goes around, and it's supposed to. It does, and we see it. And she's cooking and eating with her daughter. We notice that they may have been immigrants to the United States or somewhere. But they eat Chinese. Seeing the little kids attempting to eat with chopsticks is fun. And there's certainly nothing inappropriate about any of this, because that's the kind of thing you teach kids to do, whether it's chopsticks or forks or whatever it is. And they pray together. And certainly that's a big part of most people's lives, and should be.
Should be, yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, they just seemed happy where they lived. They continued their Chinese customs, like eating and praying, totally appropriate. They're not, you know, dressing differently or anything. We don't know what they're speaking because we don't ever hear them speak, but they're obviously communicating. You know, how would I act? They were acting like I think I would act or you would act in that kind of a situation.
Well, I think that's the point, is the, you know, we're all humans, you know, as a species, we all go through these cycles of life. And, you know, if we could just recognize that we are one species with, you know, maybe little differences, maybe you've got brown eyes and I have blue eyes, but basically we're hopefully our values and our customs would be parallel. And that's a good message to start the new year with, I feel.
It is indeed. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival. Diane, one more time, repeat the information on when, where the Garden State Film Festival will be.
Oh, it's March 21st through the 24th, 2024 in Asbury Park, New Jersey. And you can find out all about it at www.gsff.org. Thank you, Denny. This has been wonderful. And again, Happy New Year to everyone who's listening.
Indeed. Diane, thank you so much for being a great member of the Frontlines of Freedom team and for the great movies you find for us and being such a good friend. God bless you.
You too, Denny.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups now. Maybe 64 this time. I want your ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com, we are fighting for the American farmer. U.S.-only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com, use your promo code FREEDOM, and you get 10% off today. Support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny or frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Army vet Pam wrote that Santa did visit her house, and she's sure that Santa visited you because you sure do a good job.
Thanks, Pam. Yeah, we had a wonderful Christmas, as you apparently did. Skip, did you hear that? I did a good job.
Yeah. Why don't you pat yourself on the back, Colonel?
I'm doing it right now.
Okay. Army vet Peter's grandson was also at the Army-Navy game and really enjoyed it, as you did. Go Army!
Thanks, Peter. It was quite a game, one worth watching, and we won. Hoo-wah! And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 4 January 1910, the USS Michigan, BB-27, our first dreadnought battleship, was commissioned.
Those dreadnoughts were big for the day, not so big for today. And the 2nd of January, 1942, during World War II, the Navy Airship Patrol Group 1 and Airship Squadron 12 were established at Lakehurst, New Jersey. The Navy was the only military service in the world to use airships, also known as blimps, during the war. The Navy was actually behind the times in use of blimps. It didn't get around to ordering the first blimp until 1915, at which time even the Army was using them. So, by the close of World War I, the Navy had recognized their value and was using several blimps for patrolling coastlines for enemy submarines. Indeed, they provided so extremely effective that no convoy supported by a blimp surveillance ever lost a ship. Between the wars, it was agreed that the Army would use non-rigid warships to patrol the coasts of the U.S., while the Navy would use rigid airships for long-range scouting and fleet support. The Navy ended its employment of its rigid airships in the 1930s after two crashed at sea. In 1937, the Army transferred all its remaining non-rigid blimps to the Navy.
And on 4 January 1944, during World War II, Operation Carpetbagger, our aircraft began dropping supplies to guerrilla forces throughout Western Europe. We believed guerrillas were a vital support to the formal armies of the Allies in their battle against the Axis powers. Virtually every country that experienced Axis invasion raised the guerrilla force. There were especially effective and numerous in Italy, France, China, Greece, the Philippines, Yugoslavia, and the Soviet Union. A guerrilla force's main weapon is sabotage. In addition to killing enemy soldiers, the goal is to incapacitate or destroy communication lines, transportation centers, and supply lines. In Italy, partisan resistance to fascism began with assaults against Mussolini. Upon Italy's surrender, the guerrillas attacked the German occupiers. By the summer of 1944, resistance fighters immobilized 8 of the 26 German divisions in northern Italy. By the end of the war, Italian guerrillas controlled Venice, Milan, and Genoa, but at a considerable cost, losing roughly 50,000 fighters. Perhaps the most renowned wartime guerrilla force was the French Resistance, also known as the Free French Force, led by General Charles de Gaulle, who left France upon the Vichy Armistice with Germany, rallied his forces via the British airwaves. The Allies realized that guerrilla activity was essential to ending the war and supported the Patriots with airdrop. Our support was critical because guerrillas fought admirably in difficult conditions. Those partisans who were captured by the enemy were invariably treated barbarically, as were any civilians who had aided them. Tens of thousands of guerrillas died in the course of the war, but were never awarded the formal recognition given the official fighting forces, despite the enormous risks and sacrifices.
They were brave, brave men and women. And on 1 January 1946, an American soldier accepted the surrender of about 20 Japanese soldiers who had just learned the war was over by reading it in a newspaper. It was on the island of Corregidor, located at the mouth of the Manila Bay in the Philippines, that this lone soldier, on detail with the American Graves Registration, was busy recording the makeshift graves of American soldiers who had died fighting the Japanese. About 20 Japanese soldiers approached him, literally waving a white flag. They'd been living in an underground tunnel during the war and learned the country had already surrendered when one of them ventured out in search of water and found a newspaper announcing Japan's defeat. That must have been an interesting sensation for that soldier.
And on 4 January 1951, during the Korean War, for the third time in 6 months, the South Korean capital, Seoul, changed hands as Chinese troops moved in. Our 8th Army regrouped as Seoul fell to the communists for the second time in the war. Britain's 27th Commonwealth Infantry Brigade covered the UN withdrawal, then blew the bridges over the Han River. Naval guns of Task Force 90 held the communists at bay until 69,000 UN troops withdrew by sea from the port of Incheon.
And on the 4th of January 1989, aircraft from the USS John F. Kennedy shot down two hostile Libyan MiG fighters over the Mediterranean. Libya obviously was not playing by the rules.
And on 3 January 1990, Panama's General Manuel Antonio Noriega, after holding up for 10 days at the Vatican Embassy in Panama City, surrendered to U.S. military troops to face charges of drug trafficking. Noriega was flown to Miami the following day, and crowds of citizens on the streets of Panama City rejoiced. On 10 July 1992, the former dictator was convicted of drug trafficking, money laundering, and racketeering, and sentenced to 40 years in prison.
So I guess he's still in prison. And on 4 January 2002, Army Special Forces Sergeant Ross Chapman, 31 years old, was killed by enemy fire near Khost, Afghanistan. He was the first U.S. soldier to die by enemy fire.
And on 4 January 2012, Coast Guard cutter Healy, under the command of Captain Beverly Havlick, embarked on the first ever Arctic domestic icebreaking mission while escorting the Russian tanker vessel Renda through 800 miles of Bering Sea pack ice to deliver 1.3 million gallons of fuel to icebound Nome, Alaska. After 10 days of intense close aboard ice escorting, the two vessels safely arrived on 14 January 2012 and began a 60-hour over-the-ice fuel transfer while hove to in the ice 468 yards offshore of Nome.
So we were buying fuel from Russia back then. Interesting, interesting, interesting. And that's the military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, according to police, three teens became involved in an altercation inside a Kroger store with a number of patrons, whereupon they were asked to leave by security. The three then went outside to wait for a 53-year-old father to come out. It's unclear why Mr. Smith in particular was targeted by the group or what the nature of the disagreement inside the store was. Witnesses said that the three appeared to be laughing and enjoying themselves as they punched and kicked Smith to death in the parking lot. The beating only stopped because a passerby with a firearm ordered them to stop beating on Smith, causing them to flee across the lot.
Thanks, Colonel. This is a growing threat, and you're going to be hearing about it more and more as society continues to go south. Some teenagers have the bodies of men, the brains of children. They're filled with testosterone, which they haven't learned how to control yet, and nothing really bad has ever happened to them. In short, they're long on speed, strength, and stamina, but short on wisdom and compassion. Teens have been playing pranks and getting in trouble for centuries. But 50 years ago, many teens just knocked over a trash can or two. Now, they beat the elderly to death while laughing about it, just for fun. Our culture has gotten to the point where it's no longer safe for women and the elderly to be on the streets at night alone. The number one rule in our big cities is this: don't go unarmed. The three teens were chased off by a Good Samaritan with a gun. Nothing less would have chased them away in this case. Roughly 40% of the time you are accosted, just pointing the gun at the bad guy is enough to chase them off. That means the rest of the time you have a determined attacker and you may have to pull the trigger. Carry a gun every place it's legal, and don't frequent gun-free zones. It's no longer safe for women and the elderly. If you're faced with a deadly threat, then always shoot to stop the threat. Most people with limited training should go for the center of the torso for accurate hits and continue to shoot until the threat stops. I know that sounds calloused, but this is the world we now live in. And if you want to keep on living in this world, then you're going to have to get training and get armed to protect yourself and the ones you love. Front Lines of Freedom salutes the armed Good Samaritan who chased off the three teens. We only wish that he could have gotten there soon enough to save the man's life.
Indeed. Our movie of the month is Let's Eat. We just reviewed it. You can still go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. It's neat. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, SEAL Captain John Doolittle will discuss his service and how he keeps fit. Then Chuck Dinnerstein will discuss the American Council on Science and Health. This is about real science. And then Chaplain Jay Burke will discuss the tornado disaster at Fort Campbell. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafreedom.com. That's cvafreedom.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the Front Lines of Freedom. And we wish you all a very, very happy new year. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you won't get anywhere else on the Front Lines of Freedom. Dismissed.